Introduce yourselves, please.
My name is Celia Yopis-Jepson. I'm the education reporter at the Topeka Capital Journal.
My name is Brian Lowry. I am the State House correspondent for the Wichita Eagle.
I'm Bill Rich, and I teach constitutional law at Washburn Law School.
This group, I have a feeling, is going to make school finance litigation in Kansas sexy again. But first, here's the open. This is State House Blend. I'm Sam Zeff.
And I'm Brian Ellison. We're using coffee
and donuts
to better understand the legislatures on both sides of the state line,
the issues and the people in Topeka
and Jeff City. Here we go.
All right, so as we sit here in the KCUR 89.3 production studio, we are a day past the state Supreme Court oral arguments in the latest school finance case in Kansas. The case is called Gannon. That's for you lawsuit caption fans out there. Brian's here from the Eagle to help us understand the politics. Celia from the Capital Journal is here to help us with education issues. And Bill from Washburn University will help us understand the legal aspects. And Bill, I'm going to start with you. There's a lot of folks and have always said across the street there in the Capitol that the courts have no business in school finance in Kansas. So tell me why the courts have business in school finance in Kansas.
Well, the primary reason is because there's a provision in the state constitution that says that the state shall provide suitable education. And because it's a constitutional requirement, the courts for a long time actually have been looking at this issue to determine whether or not what Kansas is doing is suitable. And that term ends up having a kind of it becomes a term of art and one that courts around the country have used. When that term was first added to the Kansas Constitution in 1966, I think there was an understanding that it would likely trigger litigation, and the litigation started in the 1970s. It's really not until a very recent history that the legislature has started to say, oh, this shouldn't be a judicial issue at all. That claim started really about 10 years ago. And that has been the position of the state legislature, but it has been consistently rejected, not only in Kansas, but in most of the other states where similar language exists.
So and the fact that there's been language in the state constitution from the very beginning, since Kansas became a state, showing that education was an important thing to the founders of the state of Kansas, correct?
That's right. In 1859, they put education into the state constitution, and the expectations have grown ever since.
Yep. Celia, I want to get into what all this means about education, but first let's hear a little comment from KCK Superintendent Cynthia Lane after the court hearing yesterday.
Well, what really strikes me is that we're talking about two generations of kids now who have not had access to the resources they need to be highly educated.
So I'm wondering if that's what you hear from educators as you cover this, that there really is some harm happening to children because there seems to be, at least in some people's minds, the courts in some case, an underfunding of education in Kansas.
Yeah, absolutely. That is what I hear from the educator point of view. I talked to the Garden City School District yesterday. They were talking about how they handled changes to school finance this year, and that included eliminating 8 teaching positions. And since educators are generally concerned with class sizes and factors like that as important to quality of education, they argue that, yes, this is a matter of affecting the lives of children, and court cases take so long to resolve. Gannon started in 2010, and of course, Montoy ran from 1999 to 2005. I mean, in the 5-7 years that it can take for a court case, a child goes from kindergarten, you know, to finishing elementary school.
I think the lawyer from the state pointed out that Montoy, who is the named plaintiff in the case from the 90s, is in his 30s now. And Luke Gannon, who is the first named plaintiff in the current case, is in his late teens. I'm wondering what you think about the notion that this particularly hurts kids who have some special needs, whether that's English as a second language, kids who may need a little additional help. Are you hearing from educators that this lack of funding or this drawn out legal process is particularly difficult on those children?
Yeah, that's definitely another argument that I hear. It's something that educators felt was taken care of with the last school finance lawsuit, Montoy, that included kind of targeting more funds towards specific needs in addition to a higher base state aid. And that was kind of, you know, on track for 3 years until the recession hit when things kind of backtrack. So, yeah, they're very concerned. I mean, I'm in Topeka, of course, and our school district has a low income rate among students in the 80% range now, I believe. So they do believe that they need extra resources to serve certain students.
Yeah, Brian, you're not in Wichita. You cover the capital, but the Wichita School District has had an influx of foreign students coming in. The Eagle's done a lot of reporting on that. This must be particularly important to the folks in the Wichita School District.
And as some people may know, on Monday, the Wichita School District will be going before the State Finance Council, which is a special committee. It's chaired by the governor. And they will be seeking some extra aid to help out the refugee students. There's two charities that are working with the federal government to place students in the Wichita area. That means that the Wichita School District is getting this influx of kids who don't have a long history of formal schooling, don't necessarily speak English at all, or if they do, not very well. And some of them are even struggling from post-traumatic stress disorder. So what the school district is seeking is some money to hire some new staff, some people who would specialize in this to help integrate these kids into the school. And obviously, Wichita is a very diverse population. So even apart from the refugee students, you have a high number of English language learners. You have a high number of low-income students. Wichita, like KCK, is one of the plaintiff districts in this case. And so for Wichita, it would be significant to win this case. Wichita is also waiting to see if the Finance Council is going to approve their request Monday for the current year after it took no action in August.
Yeah, I want to come back to that a little bit later with Celia, but I want to bring Bill back in. So we hear these names. We hear Gannon. We hear Montoy. Give me a little bit more of the history of school finance litigation in Kansas, because it goes way, way, way back.
Oh, it certainly does. In fact, if you go back into the 1930s, you find time when they really began to accept the fact that the state itself had responsibilities at a standard that might that should include things like equality. And so equality became a part of the expectation starting then, moving all the way forward. After the 1966 amendments to the state constitution, expectations went up.
Let me just stop you there. The 1966 amendments to the state constitution really it feels like put more of a burden on the state to finance education. Does that sound fair?
That's right. They used language that made it the responsibility of the state to see to it that education would be suitable, and that's the term that becomes the work of art in this context. Litigation began in the early 1970s. In the early days of the litigation, there was really a fairly cooperative attitude, at least in relative terms, compared to what we see today. We had courts making decisions and the legislature responding, and problems seemed to be addressed fairly readily. It's really the more recent litigation that has become more intractable, with the state legislature and the governor digging in their heels and saying, no, that shouldn't be your responsibility.
And I want to cover that in just a second, but I just want to cover, we talked about equity, and that was the main portion of what was discussed in the Supreme Court yesterday. is funding our school districts being equitably funded in Kansas. But the trickier, I think, part of this case is coming up, and that is whether kids are getting an adequate education. That could cost a lot more money. But this whole notion of adequacy is something that is something the court kind of recently found in Article 6. So explain to me how we got to adequacy.
Again, the term is suitability, and adequacy is a concept that arose not in Kansas, but in a variety of other states where the same issue is being litigated. And the notion of what is suitable, it was seen, had to include both a concept of equity and a concept of adequacy. The courts, it was a Kentucky court, actually, that enumerated a set of standards that defined what adequacy should mean. The legislature in Kansas basically embraced those same standards. And the question then became one of trying to measure whether or not the Kansas school systems were meeting that definition of adequacy. The state hired experts, and it's really the experts of the state that came up with an estimate of what is meant by adequacy. This was more than 10 years ago, and found that more money was needed to so that the schools would be able to meet the definition of adequacy that the state itself had arrived at and that the courts had arrived at. That's really what has been the focus of much of the litigation ever since. And you're right, that's a much bigger dollar sign than the one that has to do with equity, the current issue.
And Sam, you should probably note that these aren't necessarily the dictionary definitions of either equity or adequacy. One of my favorite moments in the hearing yesterday was when one of the state's attorneys said, "This court has never equated equity with equality." And I just, as a student of the English language, that is one of my favorite sentences I've ever heard. It's also one of the most puzzling things I've ever heard. But it gets into the grayness of what these terms are legally.
And it also conveys a sense that what we're talking about is reasonableness in terms of what it takes to meet this standard. And the thing that people sometimes have difficulty understanding is that there's always a local component to financing of education, or there always has been. And there are those who would think that we should simply rely on local financing. But some communities are much better able, it's much easier for some districts that have substantial wealth to meet those standards compared to other districts that have relatively little wealth. And so it becomes a responsibility of the state to make up that difference. And that's really what the equity component is all about.
All right, two quick points here. The standards that you refer to are the Rose standards. That comes out of a 1989 Kentucky Supreme Court case. And I don't know how this is going to sound, but the fact that the state of Kentucky is deciding what is and isn't adequate in education has always seemed a little puzzling to me. The other thing, and I want to just ask about this. So yesterday, Alan Roop, and we're going to hear from him in just a second, suggested that maybe one way to cure this is that you just get rid of all local funding and that you increase the mill levy that the state levies and then just fund everything from the state. I want to go around the table and ask your thoughts on that and how likely you think that might be. So, Celia, you talked to educators probably more than me. Would they like to get out of the local funding of education and just take money from Topeka and make it simplify it like that?
Well, that's probably going to depend on which school district you're in. There are some school districts, as you know, since we're sitting in the Kansas City area right now, where patrons have been interested in expanding the cap so that they can use their tax base more for local initiatives for their schools. And then there are superintendents, there are educators I talk to in districts that have very low tax bases where it's hard for them to replace an aging bus. And so, I mean, there are just incredibly different perspectives on that. So I don't know that you would ever get people on one page on an issue like that.
Okay. I want to play a couple of more comments after the hearing yesterday. Went 2.5 hours, so a little bit longer than, about a half hour longer than they had budgeted for. First, you're going to hear from Kansas Attorney General Derek Schmidt and then Alan Roop, who represents the plaintiff school districts.
The legislature is not a monolith, which makes this a very difficult challenge. There are a whole lot of different voices with widely divergent interests on this subject matter.
The legislature, which clearly can't act in a constitutional manner without some clear guidance, needs to have a MapQuest of where they need to go in order to comply with the Kansas Constitution.
All right. I've never seen Brian Lowry laugh quite so hard at a comment from a lawyer before.
Well, my dad's an attorney, so, you know, you just need to go to some family dinners then.
So let me just start with what Derek Schmidt said, and that is whatever school finance discussions there are in the Kansas legislature, you got a wide variety of people over there, and coming to any sort of consensus around legislation or whatever this court rules is going to be very, very difficult. What do you think about that?
Well, as people know, as people who follow politics closely know, but not everyone may know, is that there's really three main factions in the Kansas legislature. There's the Democrats, there's the moderate Republicans, and there's the conservative Republicans. And the moderates often on education issues team up with the Democrats. But right now, the conservatives have a strong majority in the Senate, and they have a slight majority in the Kansas House. And so the conservatives are not going to like being told by the court in a few months, if they are told by the court in a few months, that they need to put more money towards this. One reason is that the other news that we got yesterday, which is the Kansas budget situation. Mm-hmm. We're facing a $120 million shortfall for the current year. The governor's already released his plan to fill that, but his plan's only going to leave us with about $5.6 million left. That's if everything goes perfectly. And then we're facing about $180 million shortfall for the next fiscal year. So the only way, if the court turned around Monday and said you need to put $50 million, if they gave them an exact number, which they probably wouldn't, but if they did, said you had to put $50 million more into schools, where's that money going to come from? You would either have to make significant cuts to other areas of the state budget, or you would have to change the tax code significantly. And some of us remember that that was not too easy for them to do this past session, pass a tax increase. So the political jockeying is very difficult because it's not just one issue. It's not just the issue of should we be funding schools more or less. It's the issue of, well, where do we get the money? How do we shore up the budget? How does this impact other areas to the budget that for the corrections department, for example? You know, people want to give corrections officers raises. Well, if we have to put that money into schools, we're not going to have the money to do that. So it's all very thorny. And I think anyone who tries to jump in that thorn bush is going to get pricked.
Yep, they're all going to get. There's going to be. They're all going to get scratched. There's going to be a lot of Band-Aids and a Bactine, I suspect. So I want to go back to what Alan Roop said, and that is that the Kansas legislature, in his view, has had some problems following the Kansas Constitution, and that they really need to be led by the hand to make sure that they're fulfilling their Article 6, which is the part of the Kansas Constitution which speaks to public funding. How did we get to the point where, and you spoke about this earlier, how do we get to the point, Bill, that the Kansas legislature needs a MapQuest, as Alan Roop suggested?
Part of the reason we get to that is that there has been resistance to what the Kansas Supreme Court has said in the past. And the court, I think, is very reluctant to give a number and say to the legislature, this is the number that you have to meet. What the court expects is a reasonable decision based on the standards that they have given. But as Brian was just describing it, the legislature doesn't necessarily act in a reasonable manner in the sense that the courts have in mind reasonableness. What happens within the legislature is that they try to come up with a number based on a variety of other factors and then figure out, okay, this is the amount we can put into schools. The court wants something much more deliberate than that. And it's hard for legislatures to be deliberate. in that sense. And that's where I think much of the breakdown comes between the courts on the one hand and the legislature on the other. Legislature is a political body, and to call the process of legislating deliberate in this sense, looking, for instance, at those Rose standards that you referred to, is a very difficult kind of thing and rarely happens. That's what the court wants, though.
But help me explain what deliberate means. I mean, does that mean that that they need to suck a little politics out of this, that they need it to be a little bit more analytical? What are you saying?
Exactly. You know, there are standards, and the legislature itself has accepted those standards in large part, that there are various objectives that we have in terms of what our schools should meet, what our students should be able to learn, what opportunities they should have based on their education. And there have been professional studies as to how much money it takes to meet those standards. That's the kind of thing that the courts are looking for. And it was the state's own experts who came up with a set of both the standards and the kind of money that it would be take to meet that. But that process becomes lost in the political realm. And the politicians simply come up with a number. Part of the attitude of the courts, I think, is, look, the legislature has the ability simply by changing the tax structure or raising taxes to meet whatever the need really is. And so the courts, therefore, would like for the legislature to determine what the need is and come up with the money to meet that need without having to compromise with the Department of Corrections. That's where the two are not communicating very well right now.
Steve McAllister, who is the Solicitor General for the state, suggested yesterday that should the court decide on some remedy, whatever that may be, a hard dollar figure or some direction, that the court immediately stay that to give the legislature a chance to fix it. So I'm going to ask what you think do you think the court would look favorably upon that, or has this? And there was a lot of talk yesterday that this thing has dragged on for generations. And do you think maybe the court is its patience is wearing thin?
I'm sure the court's patience is wearing thin. But that doesn't mean they're not going to give the legislature the opportunity to decide how to meet whatever obligations they have. And that has been the history. That's likely to happen one way or another again. Lurking behind all of this, however, is the understanding that the longer this goes, there becomes a possibility that even the composition of the court will change. Five of the current Kansas Supreme Court justices will be on the ballot next fall.
Right.
And I think the people who are involved in these issues understand that and understand those five justices may be targeted, at least four of them, and that particularly the conservative position, which is that the courts shouldn't even be involved in this, could become a kind of election issue as well.
Yeah. Brian, what do you think about that?
Well, Governor Brownback became very involved with the effort to oust, the unsuccessful effort to oust two of the justices after the decision in the Carr brothers case.
Right. Those are the brothers from Wichita who were convicted of murder.
They had overturned the death sentence for some technical reasons. And so the governor was involved in that. I think you're right that it wouldn't be a surprise to see the governor, to see lawmakers get involved with the political effort to oust some of these judges. We're heading to a collision right now. You know, we've got the election, we've got the budget questions, and we've got the these looming court decisions. And so, timing becomes a very interesting issue. When does the court hand down their decision? If the legislature's still in session, do they pass a tax increase? What budget moves do they make to either cover the more funding, what are the other losses? And then there's going to be a huge election impact. And the question is, who are the voters going to hold responsible? Are they going to be angry at the lawmakers, or are they going to be angry at the justices? Right now, I can tell you. And I guess it would probably depend on what school district you're living in to tell you. to tell you whether people are going to be angry at the judges or angry at the lawmakers.
Thoughts about that, Celia? Who are they going to be angry at, do you think?
I think that probably was a fair assessment that it maybe depends on where you live in Kansas. And I mean, aside from that, what you think about whether your local schools have the resources they need or not, for example, which, you know, that opinion varies regardless of where you live, too.
Right. I mean, there's almost nothing that could happen, it seems to me, that could damage the big three school districts in Johnson County. They seem, no matter what goes on, to just be fine. What any thoughts on this?
I'm not sure about that. From a sense that it's the Johnson County school districts that are going to resent limitations right. on what they can do,
yes.
and particularly limitations on what they can do locally. And that's where the equity issue comes into play. It's a lot easier for those districts to do things than for the poorer districts. And it's difficult to understand, if you live in a really wealthy district, why it is that you in turn also have to provide support for people who, from that perspective, are choosing to live in poorer school districts.
This idea that we could have a statewide property tax system that funds schools equitably across the board, the Johnson County lawmakers are going to resist that.
They'd go crazy over that.
Yeah. I mean, Johnson County citizens and lawmakers are very protective of their schools, and some of those local funding options are what have allowed Johnson County schools to be as successful as they are. So I don't think they're going to be up for sharing that pot with Wichita or Topeka.
Yep. Quick comment from both Bill and Brian. We've heard for a long time that we may be heading towards a constitutional crisis. We've heard that before. Sometimes it feels like oftentimes it feels like hyperbole. But do you think that there is enough lawmakers in Topeka who would dig their heels in and say no to any potential remedy that the Kansas Supreme Court may come up with in school funding, both with equity and adequacy? Bill?
I think it's possible. We came pretty close to that in 2005, and the legislature is a lot more conservative now than it was in 2005. So the resistance is certainly there, the desire at some level, and we've seen it reflected in other areas, particularly the judicial budget, which is an indicator that there is a kind of interest in resisting the judges. But beyond saying it's possible, trying to speculate as to what would really happen is awfully difficult.
Brian, speculate.
I think it is possible. I mean, it's before the 2014 session, which was my first year covering the State House, there was this big threat of the constitutional crisis, and it was averted. Lawmakers did what the court, well,
sort of.
There's some question about that now, but lawmakers acted after a court order. It feels more likely this year. I think there still are a number of legislative leaders who would try to avoid that constitutional crisis, but there's certainly going to be rank and file members who are itching for that fight. I'll tell you who I wouldn't want to be is Attorney General Derek Schmidt, because I remember in 2014 him meeting with House Republicans and coming very close to pleading with them, just please do what the court tells you. And so Schmidt's going to be the guy who is caught up in the middle of this if the legislature does want to buck the court's order.
And in fact, he even said that yesterday, I think, right after the comment that we heard on tape. He said, you know, I could sit down with all the legislators, and I would get just as many opinions as I would as there mm-hmm. are lawmakers in Kansas. Before we wrap it up, Celia, you had a nice scoop on extraordinary needs funds in the Topeka Capital Journal. So tell us, before we close, tell us about that story and what we can expect from the State Finance Council, which is meeting on Monday.
Well, on Monday, we have a couple dozen school districts that are coming to Topeka to basically ask the legislature for, or leaders, including Brownback and lawmakers, for extra money for their schools. They're making cases that they need it. For various reasons. The number one reason is a lot of school districts have lost a lot of local tax base because of the drop in oil and gas prices. So they're going to make that plea, but this week, Sean Sullivan's office, the director of budget, revealed that he will be recommending against giving funding to some of those school districts until potentially next year. So that was not welcome news for some superintendents.
There was about $12 million originally in the extraordinary needs right. funds. They have about $6 million
yes.
left. Do we think that that $6 million is going to be, as they say in Kansas, swept up and put in the general fund to help balance the budget? What do we think about that?
Well, it does state specifically in the law that created this fund. This is a new fund, of course, right. and it's very controversial. Superintendents view it as a kind of under the table, you know, very sneaky budget cut because the fund came from taking general state aid from each of the 286 school districts, putting it into a pot, and then basically saying you can have part of this pot of money if you can show why you really need it. And so for all the school districts not getting any of that money, they see it as a budget cut. And then written into the law that, you know, created this fund, it also says that at the end of the fiscal year, if the lawmakers haven't appropriated the money to schools, it goes into the state coffers. So, you know, for some superintendents, that just, you know, confirms for them. They say, well, OK, the plan is actually to say, oh, none of you really need this money. So guess what? We have a budget hole. We're going to put it in the state coffers. That's definitely what some educators are thinking is going to happen. But I guess we'll have to see what the State Finance Council does.
Brian, you have some thoughts on whether this money is going to get swept up? I mean, we got a new consensus revenue estimate. It looks like KDOT's going to lose a ton more money. Is this just another way of trying to balance the a hurting budget in Kansas?
I'd hesitate to make a prediction there. I know the Wichita School District is watching this, you know, very carefully. They're very worried about making sure they get some money for the refugees that we mentioned. Some of the other districts have other concerns. What you saw at the August meeting was they did hand out money to the school districts, but they didn't hand out as much money as the school districts wanted. So Sullivan is recommending to hold off on this year for some of those districts. They may take his recommendation. They may give the school districts some of the money they're requesting. If there is money left over, you know, it wouldn't come as a shock if they did end up sweeping that back into the general fund. Because as we said, we're going to be so tight on our cash balance. I did some math on my way over, Sam. And, you know, I was an English major, so I wasn't a particularly good math guy, but I was pretty good on this one. So there's about – it's slightly less than 3 million people.
If
you round up, living in Kansas, right? If everything goes according to plan, under the governor's plan, we're going to have slightly less than $6 million right. left over. So I figured out that was about $2 – you know, if you round it, for every Kansas citizen that we'll have left over in the state coffers.
So what you're saying is if everybody throws $2 into the hat, we're going to be fine?
No, I'm saying that's how much we'll have in the hat.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And, you know, there's a lot of heads in the state, so I don't know if that's going to cover everybody's head if we're going to keep going with this hat metaphor.
They decide to block the dispersal of this fund, so it's like waving a flag in front of the Supreme Court, because these were designed to be funds that would meet particular needs, which is precisely what equity is all about.
Yep.
And saying, no, we're going to ignore those real problems of equity that are created by this block grant system, it would in turn make the court all the more adamant, I think, about the need to build those standards in and be tough
and
with the legislature.
And I think the perfect storm that Brian started to describe as we go into 2016 is looking more and more likely all the time. We have to leave it there. I do believe that we have put sexy back into school finance, and I want to thank all of you for that. Bill Rush from Washburn University, Brian Lowry from the Wichita Eagle, Celia Yopis-Jepson from the Topeka Capital Journal. Now, generally on this podcast, guest, we let our special guest pick the music that we roll out on. But because you are all so special to me, we are going to go around the table. You're going to tell me the song that is on your mind right now, and then I will choose. Celia, we start with you.
Oh, no, my mind is blank. I'm on the spot. Walkout song?
Yeah.
Sorry, I can't come up with one at the moment. I'm not creative enough. You can't expect me to switch from something like
no,
school finance.
I can't. All right, you know what? I'm going to give you a chance to think about this, and I will give you a chance, and we'll come back. Brian, I know you've been thinking about this for days now.
I have, actually, because last time I was on, you went with Steve Caranda's pick.
And I know this has been a burr under your saddle for some time.
And so my pick today is Elvis Costello's Radio Radio, as a special tribute to the medium that we are on.
Bill, is there a song on your mind?
Oh, well, just to show how out of it I am as to such things, I'd say Home on the Range.
Going with the Kansas State song.
Absolutely.
Are you a Kansan by
I'm
by
a Kansan.
All right, I'm liking that. Celia, I'm coming back to you, my friend.
No, I'm going to second both of their motions then.
Play a mashup of Elvis Costello and Home on the Range.
Yeah, can we do that?
No, we can't. But I'm going to go with Home on the Range because I am a Kansas guy myself.
How about that?
And there it is right there. Statehouse Blend is produced by Matt Hodapp. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Find us on kcur.org/statehouseblend. Our friends down the hall there at Up to Date make a little room for us Tuesdays at 11. A lot of times we have a citizen voice here, and if you want to be sit in the studio with us and maybe question a lawmaker or two, you can email me, sam@kcur.org. Are you a fan of the Twitter? Who's a fan of the Twitter in here?
Well, you wouldn't let us live tweet today, but...
I apologize about that. You can follow my co-host, Brian Ellison. He's at PTS Brian. I'm at Sam Zeth. Thanks very much, and we'll see you next time.